Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, joined by Jenny Carlson and Joe Masato after the Thunder's 107-97 loss to the Dallas Mavericks. But we're not actually going to talk about the game for a while. There are some nights in basketball when actual basketball doesn't seem to matter that much, and tonight was one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just put it quite well. Like, it didn't feel like this game mattered all that much. I mean, you walk into the arena and instantly, I think I can speak for all of us, and like, it just felt different. Like, everyone, you know, it's just Kobe's effect on the NBA was so large that playing a game a day after his death and the tragic death of his daughter and seven others really puts a lot of things into perspective. And from, you know, a guy like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who looked up to Kobe and spent a year, I think he said after the game that he actually never met him, even though he spent a year in L.A. with the Clippers last year. He wore his jersey coming into the arena. And then I thought the Thunder handled things well with that moment of silence. And then the fans were great chanting his name afterwards.
Yeah, definitely chanting his name through as other teams yesterday began to do and has kind of become the precedent is an 8-second violation followed by a 24-second violation, which were the two numbers that he wore in his career.
Yeah, just, you know, it really was a cloud. I mean, it's going to be a cloud for a while, so it figures that it would be that way. And I know we'll talk about the game at some point, but you know, I think we sort of saw the weight of what happened yesterday on these guys. You know, yes, this was an important game. These two teams are really jockeying for position when it comes to playoffs. And under normal circumstances, you know, I think we'd have seen a really highly competitive, intense game. That's how this, you know, these two have gone at each other this year. But it just like felt like everybody was a little bit wonky tonight. You know, guys were missing shots they'd otherwise make. Obviously, the Thunder missing key components of their lineup. They would have been had Chris Paul not been out for personal reasons. But then you add that, and it just compounds it, and just it just felt like an off night.
Yeah, and it was a night when these nights are hard to cover because you want to give the players the space that they need to deal with the grief, which the whole NBA community is dealing with right now, whether or not people personally knew Kobe or had just been influenced him. But he was such a larger-than-life figure that he influenced well beyond the people who he like physically met. But you want to give the players the space to deal with those emotions, but you also want to give them the opportunity to tell their stories and share their memories. And so we got some of those tonight, but it was definitely tough for them. You know?
Yeah. And a guy like Shai, who's, you know, 21 years old, has a lot different perspective than a guy like Chris Paul, who's 34, and, you know, he came into the league after Kobe, but they played against each other for 11 seasons, and, you know, they're kind of a little more in that same range as far as when they hit their peak levels. So, and Chris Paul wasn't here tonight. He was away from the team, out for personal reasons officially, and, you know, we can only assume that that's, you know, mourning the loss of Kobe Bryant. And that he might be back home right now. So just an emotional time for him. Still haven't, you know, we haven't heard publicly from guys like Chris Paul and LeBron James and, you know, a lot of those Lakers.
I think LeBron today posted on Instagram. I have not gone and looked at it, but tonight during the game, right?
Yeah, it was actually an Instagram post. I just saw it. I think it was maybe late third or fourth quarter. It was the first public comments, but it was, yeah, an Instagram post and very... I mean, you could just tell it was emotional, but it was also, you know, sort of grasping, trying to, you know, come up with answers that nobody has right now. But yeah, I mean, a lot of top flight guys that have been around a while, Chris Paul, you know, James Harden, some other guys that, you know, might not have come into the league, as you said, Joe, at the same time, but would have been around Kobe a lot. I think that older generation of players taking this as the loss of a friend, a contemporary. But for guys like Shea, it's more of, this was my ideal. This was the guy that I hoped to one day be like. And so I think you're seeing sort of a, you know, everybody dealing with it, but coming at it maybe from some different perspectives.
Yeah. And then we rarely have talked about this, but you also have some members of the media or the broadcast teams who played with Kobe or were his neighbor. In the case of Michael Cage, was his neighbor for years after after Cage retired. And so they're going through an entirely different experience where, you know, they were the grizzled veterans when Kobe was coming into the league and making a huge impression.
The scope is just enormous. Like, there's not too many people in the basketball world that, like, could be lost, and the effect would happen in every NBA arena. Like you said, players, broadcasters, people have just covered and been around the NBA for so long, and like
fans.
With these, yeah, and like seeing these like 8-second violations and 24-second shot clock violations, like it's not just happening, you know, in certain spots. It's like a league. It's like a league-wide thing.
And I think it's important, too, to remember, you know, as beloved as Kobe was, and, you know, we're talking about, you know, legend, ideal, whatever adjective you want to ascribe to Kobe. I think it's, you know, we were talking before we started about the fact that Kobe was not perfect. I mean, he obviously had the charges against him back in 2003. Sexual assault allegation that ultimately was dropped, but there was a civil case, and you know, it was obviously a very it was a black mark on his career. You know, so there is that, and I don't think anyone now, you know, you can find all sorts of tributes to Kobe out there. And obviously, you know, the players will talk about his impact on them. But I think the fact that he wasn't a completely faultless guy, and he, you know, I think he learned from some of those moments too. You know, you look at a guy that, is now, you know, late in his life, as it ended up being, was very much a proponent of the WNBA, of women's basketball, obviously his daughters. You know, he seemed to maybe learn from that. He was a young guy in 2003, and, you know, maybe he did take some lessons from that. And maybe he didn't respond to it perfectly, but I think that there were a lot of people that saw the good in him, the things that they really wanted to, and not that they didn't realize that there were those other things, but I think they saw a great example of the kind of player that you could aspire to be one day. And that's a pretty powerful statement.
Yeah. I really like what Nancy Armour from USA Today wrote in her column, where this is part of a larger chunk of it, but she was talking about how we treat celebrity and athletes. And she wrote, "We excuse the inexcusable and forgive their mistakes as the price to pay for being witness to their greatness. But in doing so, we diminish the very people we revere, turn them into one-dimensional versions of themselves." And she continues, but I mean, I think that's really true. And I think that Kobe can both be an incredible, inspirational person for hundreds of thousands of people and young basketball players, but also be a reminder for sexual assault survivors that a lot of times cases, there aren't the best avenues for them to get justice, or or to, you know, things happen when they're the, we talk about victim blaming, which is a really horrible thing that happens a lot in sexual assault cases. And so I think it is important for us to grapple with Kobe's past and with the way that we as a country and as a society reacted to the sexual assault accusation back then, and how we have other accusations since. But I also think that we need to acknowledge how, like you said, Jenny, how much he lifted up WNBA in particular, but also other women's sports. He also had a moment when we're talking about teaching moments where he used a homophobic slur and then became a huge proponent of stamping out homophobia. And so there are these moments throughout his life where you see him evolving and changing and growing and having a lot of good come out of mistakes. And I think we can all try to do that in our lives as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it any better than you all just did. I mean, people are complex, and when you're discussing someone's legacy like that, you certainly can't talk about all the achievements and great things without talking about terrible mistakes that might have been made. So I think reading a lot of stories and like looking back, I think it's good that everyone's discovering the full arc of things and not just picking and choosing what they like and what's going to make someone seem more popular. But as you just pointed out, Maddie, like it was good to see, at least from a public standpoint, him trying to better the mistakes that he might have made by changing things. Okay, like I did this wrong. Now I have to do this right to try to help to overcome mistakes.
Yeah, and everyone that you talk to, especially who knew him later in his career, will bring up how great of a father he was. And I think that's part of the most tragic part of this, was that, you know, his 13-year-old daughter, Gigi, who, I mean, a lot of the viral photos and videos that we've seen recently have been them together and them enjoying basketball together. And so having them both go is a huge loss. And, you know, you just, your heart goes out to the Bryant family and everyone who knew them.
Yeah, it's hard. And it's going to be hard for a while. I mean, just because yesterday's games were tough and today's games were tough, I don't think that, you know, we're going to wake up Tuesday or Wednesday and suddenly be like, all right, it's been 72 hours. Yeah. Now everything's okay. You know, at some point, the Chris Pauls and the LeBron Jameses and those guys are going to return to play with their teams. And that's going to be hard because, you know, of their perspective in those moments. And so, and there'll be an All-Star game coming up, you know, and there'll be, you know, the balloting for the Hall of Fame. And there's just all these things that are going to happen that I think we're going to have these moments of Kobe for a while. And again, a transcendent player like this, Kobe, Jordan, Wilt, all flawed characters, again, to go back to our conversation in the last few minutes, but transcendent players that changed the game, that inspired the next generation. And we may not know who the next in that lineage is.
Sure.
But they may already be in the league. You know, we may be seeing it come to fruition in front of our eyes. So it's, but I think that because of that type of impact, it has to be felt for a while. You can't just wake up in a week and say, all right, that's behind us. Things are going to happen that are going to continue to make it hard for a while in the world of basketball.
Yeah. Like you said, he changed the actual game, and he inspired so many people who are in it now, whether they were just, you know, they only made it through middle school or if they're currently in the NBA. I mean, I was a bad basketball player, to be completely frank.
I was really, really good.
Joe could be in the NBA right now.
That was terrible.
And I still, growing up, I still said Kobe every time I shot the ball, yeah. which now like probably was a disservice to him because I missed a lot. But those makes got the Kobe treatment.
Yeah, that was always a fun game in childhood for sure. But like, you know, whenever a guy like Chris Paul is ready to talk, like I'm looking forward to see what he says, because he's the president of the Players Association. Like he's a leader of this group of players as they move past this tragedy. And you know, I think a lot of guys like look to him for that sort of guidance. And I know that doesn't fall in his role as like president of the Players Association and such, but you know, we don't know when he'll be back with the Thunder, whether that's Wednesday in Sacramento or not. But I can tell you from like a in-game perspective tonight, the Thunder certainly missed his leadership out there on the court.
Yeah, absolutely. I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but there was such a stark difference in preseason, the two games that he was there versus the two games that he wasn't, and how things snowballed. And it wasn't the same tonight. I wouldn't characterize this game as snowballing, but between, I think, those three point guards at different times all step up and give like an injection of energy and scoring or even defense as it might be when the Thunder most needs it. And Chris usually does that late in games, although we've seen him do it early in games a few times when the Thunder's been really struggling in first quarters. But even though Dennis Schroeder had some of those moments where he was leading them on an 11-0 run or however long the run may be, and getting to the rim and catching a gorgeous backdoor pass from Steven Adams and you know, getting close, getting within 5 points at the end of that 11-0 run in the third quarter that I'm loosely referencing, but they couldn't get over the hump, which is kind of what we saw for a lot of the beginning of this season, to be honest.
Yeah, I thought we saw some signs of having learned. Like, it didn't feel like they were at quite the deficit that they would have been, or they looked like at times without Chris on the floor tonight. You sort of felt like, oh, they learned a little bit, you know, they've grown. And yet you just can't replace that steadiness of Chris Paul. I mean, when they could have, you know, if they get a basket in here or get a basket there or get, you know, a steal or, you know, just maybe a small moment that could really have swung it completely back to them. I felt like that was where you needed him. You might, and of course you might say, well, you know, you could use his 20 or 22 points.
Sure.
Of course. But
nope, Thunder didn't want those.
But as much as anything, you know, if you could have injected him into the game for a moment here and a moment there, they might have had enough otherwise to sort of take it from there, but you just didn't quite have him in those moments. And I'm not saying that to say that there's anything wrong with him not being here.
No, he should take the time that he needs.
Right. I think all these guys should. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but coming here tonight and sort of feeling the way this game was, I knew that this was obviously, I mean, clearly these are tough days and hours for the world of basketball. But to feel the way this felt, and I think it just sort of hit me that, you know, this is going to take some time. I think when you're talking about the impact of how some of these, especially your stars and your more veteran guys, are taking this, you know, there's going to be a memorial, there's going to be a funeral, there's going to be things that these guys will have to be away from their teams to attend to as well. And how does the NBA do that? Because it's just, like I said earlier, it's just going to take time.
Yeah. And we talk about mental health in the NBA, and Adam Silver has addressed the unhappiness of players at times. And you know, this is a moment where you just hope that everyone has the resources they need to heal and the time that they need to heal. And, you know, that goes for all tragedies, whether they're, you know, almost, you know, universal in basketball like this one, or personal. And yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah. I mean, it's impossible to know also how emotions affected these, like the numbers tonight. Just like, you had some really good scorers who did not shoot the ball well, like Luka Doncic, who talked about Kobe after the game, and you know, that video clip went viral of Kobe getting his attention at a Lakers game and speaking Slovenian to him, and that was really cool for Luka Doncic. He was 10 of 24 tonight. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did not play well at all. He was 5 of 20. You know, Schroeder had 21 points, 7 assists, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. He shot 6 of 16 from the floor. Both teams shot right around 40%. So it just wasn't like clean basketball, and that could happen without something terrible happening the day before. But like, you just, it's impossible to quantify.
Sure. The Thunder had a head-scratching shooting performance where they shot, I mean, barely, but they shot 40% from three and 39.5% from the field. So it's odd. You probably shouldn't be shooting better from three than from two, which is how that eventual math would work out. I can't tell you what they were shooting in from two, but that's how math works.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely shot better from three. Also, this game would have been even more lopsided had the Thunder not had such an advantage from the free throw line. They made 17 free throws compared to 6 from the Mavericks. The Mavs just could not get to the line. But one thing that really struck me is, like, you know, not having Chris Paul there tonight, how it changed the rotation. Like, Deontay Burton played a season-high 23 minutes. Baisley played 20-plus minutes. Diallo played 18. Lou Dort played 25. Like, it's just, they're just weaker rotations because you're having these guys from deeper on the bench play more minutes all of a sudden, and they're just not Chris Paul. And then the Thunder's not as good.
I will say, seeing Nerlens Noel back out there.
That's what I was going to say. That was a positive.
That was a positive. You know, he wore the mask. They haven't practiced since he had the surgery. So he was basically going out there, you know, having not really worn it, which, frankly, that just seems unpleasant to me, yeah. Even if you had experience with it. But, you know, I thought he was really active. And, you know, that's a good sign that in – you know, such a short amount of time for him to feel comfortable enough to really, you know, get in there. You know, and obviously Porzingis was a guy he was going against a lot. And so, you know, for him to, I think, what did he have? 8 rebounds, 4 and 4? Is that what I'm looking at here? I mean, I thought that was a really good night for him. I mean, maybe not the shooting night he wanted, although he wasn't terrible there either. I think he scored 9 or so points.
Yeah, 3 or 4. He just didn't take that many shots.
So, I mean, I think it's – Steven Adams obviously looks like he's still rounding back into shape, probably not 100% just yet. Having Nerlens back out there, and in light of the injury, the surgery, for him to be as active as he was, I thought that was pretty darn good.
I totally agree. I was very impressed with how aggressive he, because you'd imagine that if you break your cheekbone, you wouldn't want to bang your face on anything, and he's just going in there like roughing up Porzingis. And yeah, he played very, like you said, active and aggressive, and I think that's a good sign for his return and his recovery. And I watched him warm up for like a little bit. He kept messing with the mask, trying to get it right, because it's an awkward thing. It's not like, I mean, even if you didn't see tonight, I'm sure you saw Russell Westbrook in the same mask. It's funky.
Nerlens, I thought he was really good tonight. Like, his performance stood out more than anyone's. Those 4 offensive rebounds, he definitely was active. The question I have at center is, Billy said after the game that Steven, that left ankle is still bothering him. And perhaps it's just because they're short on big bodies right now, but I don't know. Like, it just seems like when he was really bad to start the season and then he got a little bit of a break, he came back and was so good, and he did not play well. He did not move well at Minnesota the other night. Wasn't all that active tonight. And, you know, you just wonder, are they going to rest him at some point or trying to keep playing? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Mike Muscala only played...
very limited, if at all.
Yeah, 4 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, I stole Maddie's quote sheet, so she or her stat sheet, so she's a so little out blind. Of sorts. But the thing that really stood out to me about Steven Adams, and frankly anybody that was in there, while I think it was different a bit when you saw Nerlens in there, second chance points for the Mavericks, it was 18-4. You know, they and so to have and they had a ton of putback tips.
Yeah.
I bet they had 10 of those 18 points on just tipping the ball back in almost immediately after rebounding it. So that's something that if Steven Adams is not going to be effective, they're going to have to figure out a way to get some of those forwards and guards to get in there and crash the boards, because giving up that many easy at the rim putback second chance points, it's one thing to let a team get an offensive rebound and take a tough shot. It's another thing to just let them get right in there at the basket and tip it in. I mean, those are easy, easy points that that the Mavs got tonight that, you know, was really not about the Thunder forcing, you know, tough shots. There was sometimes no resistance at getting those rebounds and getting an easy putback. That to me was the biggest issue, lose by 10, and there was at least 10 points scored that way.
Yeah, I agree. Very, I don't know, I think this will be a forgettable night from a basketball standpoint, just because it wasn't the most entertaining of games, but did have a big impact on the standings. Like we mentioned at the top, the Thunder are now 2 games back of both Dallas and Houston. Dallas jumps to the 5 seed, Houston is at 6. They're tied at 29-17 apiece. Thunder 28-20 now, so 2 games back, and snaps the Thunder's 5-game winning streak.
Anyone else have any parting words? I'm done.
I will say this one thing. I'll be interested to see if the Thunder have a couple winnable road games, head to Sacramento, head to Phoenix, then have a layoff the likes of which they haven't had in a month.
Yeah.
Can they get a couple wins that they should win, number one? You don't always have wins on the road. If they can get these two, it'd be really good. And then can they get some guys back healthy? Can Steven Adams feel better the next time he plays? Those sorts of things. I think that's going to be really important moving forward.
Yeah. It's almost like they have too much time off this month or in February.
No.
In January, they were going either every other day or every day. In February, they have this 4-day break, and then they also have the All-Star break, which, like, yes, breaks are helpful to get guys back from injury. They're clearly dealing with some being banged up and all that. But, like, essentially 2 All-Star breaks seems a little overkill.
Well, as a rookie NBA reporter... I am very much looking forward to the breaks and as many days off as they can put into the schedule.
No, you're playing in the futures game.
Yeah, that's right. I got to go up to Chicago, suiting up for it against all the other young beat reporters, I guess.
Oh, my gosh. We should do that. But, like, not hold it at the same city as the actual All-Star.
We could do it at, like, the Bulls practice gym or something like that.
Something, like, much, much more. Like, some random, like, elementary school.
Hey.
Raise money for charity. Yeah.
Exactly. Jenny said raise money for charity. I think we should make it happen.
I'm willing to do it.
Call up the powers that be in our...
Just what everyone wants to watch.
It's not even the celebrity game. It's
like the anonymous people's game, I guess.
What would happen is no one would ever read any basketball coverage ever again.
Can't trust these guys. All right.
That seems as good a place as any to wrap up. I guess we'll wrap up the podcast by saying, obviously, I hate saying thoughts and prayers because that's become such a cliche and overused, and people see it as not genuine, but sincerely, we're thinking about the Bryants and those who are affected by not only their deaths, but also the seven other deaths from the helicopter crash. So our sincerest thoughts and prayers go out to them. And thank you all for tuning in to this Thunder Buddies podcast. Like it, love it, share it, subscribe. Share it with your friends, your family, your neighbors, your loved ones, your pets, of course. And we will see you on Wednesday after the Sacramento game.